there, nerds. Welcome back to another episode of Two Nerdy Dads. It is episode 18, and as we now have become legal, we decided what better way to celebrate with some video. So you get to see our ugly mugs, Jimmy Palmquist, and with me as always, Jason Applegate. Say hey, Jason.
Hey, everybody. Look at this. We're all, like, advanced and technological and stuff. It's, you know, for two old guys, we're not doing too bad, I don't think.
Nice. We caught up to 2012 in 2014.
Right. Exactly.
Anyway, Jason, what do we got going on today?
Well, as I had seen you had mentioned, and I am wearing in honor of, it is, when was Life Day? It was soon. I saw you had posted that. Is it today?
It is today as we record on Monday, yes.
So, why don't you explain what Life Day is to those nerds who don't follow Star Wars maybe as closely as the two of us have.
Now, I will say, there are people out there that hate the prequels and hate George Lucas because of the prequels. They have nothing to complain about because they've obviously never seen the holiday special.
That's true.
On November 17th, 1978, CBS aired from, I believe it was 6 to 8 p.m., the holiday special. If you missed it, tough. That was the only time it ever aired. That's it. Now, it did air in Canada and Australia and I believe parts of Europe, but that was it. Now, obviously, we were both too young to see it live, or if we do, I don't remember it. I don't think you would remember it either, Jason.
No, no. But,
we have had VHS, pirated VHS copies from way back when. Now, understand, 1978 was still early on in the VHS era, so they're not the greatest quality, but they're out there, and now with the internet, we have them on YouTube.
Right.
So, what is the holiday special? It's a fantastic combo of 70s variety show with the most popular science fiction movie of all time. Yes, we're talking B. Arthur, Art Carney, Jefferson Starship with Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford.
Yep.
Why can't I think of her name? Carrie Fisher.
Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Peter Mayhew, Kenny Baker. I mean, it's just
everybody.
It's so ridiculous. And basically the story is that Han Solo and Chewbacca out flying their missions, and it's been a while, so bear with me. I might miss the intricate details here. They're
How
trying
could you
to
forget.
I know. They're trying to make it back to Kashyyyk, which is Chewbacca's homeworld, to enjoy Life Day with his family.
Mm-hmm.
But they're stopped by a blockade. Mm-hmm. So they don't know if they're going to make it in time. I have no idea why. But then we have all these musical acts, comedy acts. Carrie Fisher sings at one point. Bea Arthur is mean, as she always is. It's weird. And the only redeeming thing, it was a 10-minute animation that introduced the world to Boba Fett.
Boba Fett, that's right. Yeah, and it was, if I remember, it's Chewbacca's son is sort of disgruntled that Chewbacca's not home yet, and they kind of sit him in front of the TV and have him watch this little cartoon.
That is right. And I think, was it Lumpy? Was that his name?
It probably is. Why would it not be? Chewie,
it was
Lumpy.
Lobaca. That's what, somebody was Lobaca. I don't remember.
That might be Mom. I don't know either. I mean, I was surprised that you remembered as much as you did about it. But the only other nugget I think is really interesting is that you also see the intentions of Return of the Jedi and the Ewoks, because in Kashyyyk you see a fortress in the trees that looks very much like what ends up being the fortresses for the Ewoks. And so it was rumored, at least, and you probably know more about this than I do, that that's what he really wanted to do, was have a planet full of Wookiees fight the stormtroopers, but logistically that was a lot more difficult to do.
Yeah, that you have it right, exactly. The trees, in his mind and the stories, were huge, so you couldn't see the ground. And that obviously wouldn't work with the technology at the time, so they went with smaller versions of Wookiees, which were Ewoks.
Right. The first Jar Jar Binks of Star Wars. Not
again,
as bad, though.
That's the beauty of the prequels. You can rip on them, you can rip on Jar Jar Binks, but nothing equals the holiday special. And to this day, George Lucas has been interviewed rather recently, within the last 10 years, and he just shakes his head, said, oh yeah, that did happen. In fairness, he didn't have much to do with it, supposedly, because he was already prepping for Empire Strikes Back. He did not direct it, he didn't write it, he didn't produce it. So it was CBS and whoever put it together. He admits it happened, but he didn't have anything to do with it.
Yes.
So, happy life day, Jason.
Happy life day, Jimmy. awesome. Awesome. In recent news, I don't know if you saw this, because it just came across, so I apologize if I'm kind of throwing this out there, but, and I know this doesn't have a lot to do with popular culture, but I thought it does have to do with, you know, being a nerd, because I bet these guys are nerds, but the group Anonymous had basically hacked some of the KKK websites, like their social media, their Twitter pages and stuff like that, in response to the KKK, you know, threatening to use lethal force against protesters about all the stuff that's happening in Ferguson. And while we usually talk about, you know, popular culture and you know, entertainment news and that kind of stuff, I thought that, you know, these kind of things overlapped here and crossed over, and it was too good of an opportunity to kind of, you know, make a comment about that and just sort of, you know, at least address it. You know much about this group, Anonymous, at all, or?
Yeah, they're sort of an activist group. Mm-hmm. But they've done a couple things like this. And what's cool is they basically condemned the KKK. I think it was just in this one area, that was the Twitter account, Missouri. And the KKK basically came back and said, we're not afraid of you, whatever, ha ha ha, Anonymous, you're a joke. And 2 hours later, Anonymous came in, hacked their account, took over control, and pardon the gruesome details, they posted a picture of a KKK member with their hood on, hanging from a tree, being lynched. And
oh, wow.
I don't know exactly what the dialogue said below, but clearly it was, we have control, you shouldn't have messed with us, you knew better, we're not done. And I believe this afternoon, I believe what you're talking about is then they then released details of their members,
mm-hmm.
their names, addresses, phone numbers, occupations, basically wow. outed everybody who was in the KKK in Missouri.
Wow. Interesting, you know, really interesting that that this is going on, because while obviously, you know, I don't think many people are going to be sympathizing with the KKK here, still pretty crazy what they were able to do and how quickly they were able to do it.
They were also the ones when the Ferguson stuff was first going down, and this is where I sort of disagree with them, because mm-hmm. I think they needed to let justice work its course. Now, I don't have intimate details on Ferguson. I don't know what happened. I do know there's some controversy over what happened on both sides, mm-hmm. but Anonymous threatened the police chief and the city that they needed to release details and the names of the police shooter, or else they were going to take action.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what you brought up is interesting. I mean, obviously, most people are going to be all for what Anonymous was doing, especially with regards to the KKK, but it brings up some really sort of scary and intriguing issues about privacy, freedom of speech, and those kinds of things as well. And really, you've got some cyber terrorism kind of going on here, and some people might take issue with that. I don't think that most people are going to take issue with, you know, who the target happens to be in this case. And we're all sort of saying, well, you kind of got what you were asking for there, guys. But interesting to say the least.
Yes.
Speaking of which, I don't know if you were able to pick up a copy, but the last time I went in, we have Captain America #1, where they rebooted it with our very first black Captain America. So thought that that was interesting. Got a chance to read that this afternoon, and thought it was pretty good. Pretty good. Was excited about it. Loved the costume. And I had to mention that one of my nephews is a huge Captain America fan. Loves Captain America. No matter what, he always, when my kids get together with their kids and they play, he's always Captain America. That's who he's going to be. And so I talked to him about, hey, did you know that Falcon's going to become Captain America? Because with the new movie, of course, he knows who Falcon is, too. And he knew Falcon from, like, the cartoons and stuff like that too. And it was so funny how little it fazed him. You know, like, I was making it a bigger deal than it was to him, because he's all of, 5 years old, and race isn't really a thing for him yet. And he's just like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I think the biggest thing that he was excited about was that he had wings and a shield, But other than that, he didn't really care that much at all. It was really kind of interesting and eye-opening that, being so young, it didn't really faze him that Captain America's black. Yeah, big deal. Who cares? So I thought that was kind of cool and worth mentioning.
That's very cool. I haven't gotten a chance to read it yet. I haven't been to the comic book store in quite a while. Sadly, I'm going to catch flack for this. I've been doing a lot of digital comics lately. Less storage, and less space to take up. It's really a wife decision, and the wife said, you've got a lot of comics, so... Nice, but I would like to say, good use of video by showing the color. I love it. We're like a 3D movie in the 80s where it's like, woo. Good job, Jason. I like it.
Thanks. Digital comics, I've done that a little bit on the iPad. And I do like how it'll, like, zoom in on the different cells. I think that's kind of something that's unique. So if you haven't tried the digital comics yet, give it a shot, old guys out there like us. I know I still like the paper, and I like the idea of sliding it into that box because it's mine, just in case. You never know, But if you're reading the comics, you're reading the comics, like, it's the same thing. Yeah.
I think one of my problems with it is that with Marvel and DC rebooting, and Marvel doing it a lot more frequently than DC, it's like, well, I don't need 1 through 700 anymore because that doesn't exist. So I just have comics. I don't know, maybe it's just me.
No, I think that's a fair comment, definitely. So liked that issue. Also got a quick chance, because I'm like you. I barely get a chance to go to the comic book store, and I'm so far behind on reading. The only reason I read these is because they're issue one, and I wasn't behind already by 5 issues or whatever, like I am with, say, She-Hulk or something like that I've been enjoying. But is the Superior Spider-Man, or sorry, not Superior Spider-Man, Superior Iron Man, issue one came out, and I thought that was pretty cool. We had talked about this back in the summer when they announced it, and how it was going to be a natural transition for Stark to go into this sort of egomaniac. And that was, of course, before the stuff with Axis that's been happening, which I haven't had a chance to read that, but as I understand, the Red Skull has Xavier's brain in his head, which I love that science fiction B-movie stuff. But, And he, because of the fallout of the battle, some of the bad guys have turned kind of good, and some of the good guys have turned kind of bad. And that might be oversimplifying because I haven't read it. But with Stark, the more negative parts of his personality have started to take hold. For example, if you know Iron Man and you followed him way back when we were kids, alcoholism was a huge issue with him. And I still love and have the issue. It's not worth much, but I just love the cover of it, of Tony Stark. And he's just like sitting at the bottom, and they made like a building out of the words. So he's like sitting in front of a building, but the words say something. I can't remember what they say, but it says something about him. This might be the last day of his life, and it's referring to the fact that he could die because of how much he's been drinking. And I thought, I love it when comics can address those types of issues, like real people problems. And so it's kind of cool seeing Stark kind of go back to it. But the other reason I really liked it was what he does is he develops this app using his, whatever his nanotechnology is called. I can't think of the term for it right now. Do you remember what it is? It was like that virus that took over his suit. Doggone it. I wish I could remember what it's called. But it's, anyway, there's an app, and basically what it does is these people... What's that?
Was it extremists?
It is extremists. Nicely done. It is extremists.
Look at what?
And I guess in this version of it, it like people download it and it makes them perfect. Like they all have supermodel bodies and faces and everything. And so everybody's sort of, you know, feeling like they're great, paradise on earth, except for the people that didn't or were not able to download the app. And so they indicate that those people who didn't are going to be sort of like the outcasts, and these elitist people are going to take it out on them. And but before that kind of goes into fruition, we find out that Stark has put a time limit on it, and so it's like a drug deal. Like the high's over, they all return back to their ugly states, and then they have to pay $100 a day for the app to continue. And so Stark is just, he's like, I'm going to make a bunch of money off of this. So I just thought that was fantastic because it does two great things. It points to the flaws of the character, you know, and the worst parts of Tony Stark, his vanity and his greed. And it also points to society and the flaws that we have and our obsession with, one, technology, but also two, you know, physical appearance and vanity as well. So I thought it was kind of cool. I'm looking forward to where it goes from here.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something that's kind of been new this week. Other things that have been sort of interesting is, have you heard about the Attack on Titan and Marvel crossover that's been going? That's been like flooding my Twitter and Facebook and everything.
I've heard it. I'm honestly, at this point, I'm not a fan. I'm not big on Marvel. Not reading much right now. I'm really DC and Valiant at the moment, so I know of it, but I don't have any idea what it is.
Well, Attack on Titan, and this is just going to show my age, I think, and that we're not in that loop, but we've never been big into you know, anime. I've liked it. I don't have anything against it. It just sort of hasn't been necessarily my thing where I keep up with it. But this thing is like the biggest thing from what I understand, the Attack on Titan storyline. And there are these like giant like human being things that attack people. I have no idea. It looks cool. I've seen video of it that looks pretty sweet. So I'll have to check it out now, though, that they're doing this Marvel and Attack on Titan crossover. Because it seems to be like what everybody's talking about, so we'll just have to kind of see how that goes.
The younger nerds in Nerd Locker have been talking about it pretty heavily, and I ignored them.
Just get off my lawn! Yeah,
exactly.
A couple other things just in the news. Daniel Brühl, who I guess was in Inglourious Basterds. Has been rumored to be in, or maybe he's confirmed to be in the new Captain America movie, Civil War, as a villain. But the rumor is that the villain he's going to be playing is Baron Zemo, which I thought was really interesting and worth noting for those of us who maybe hadn't heard about that. And then also what was interesting was the comment that, but he's not going to be the main villain, which that's what baffles me, because Baron Zemo has always been sort of like the second Red Skull. Like, he was always sort of like, you know, if the Red Skull is Megatron, then Baron Zemo was, you know, what's his name, Starscream, the Jet, or whatever, from Transformers. You know, he's like, yeah, that second guy, you know, that was the villain. So I thought, well, it would make sense that he's, but no, apparently Crossbones, who is played by the actor, I can't remember his name, but he was in, he's the guy who's in all black that ends up at the end like getting scarred basically in the explosion, and they become this Crossbones character. So I guess he's going to be the main villain, which to me, from what I know of Crossbones, he always seemed to just be like muscle. Like, he's just kind of like the hitman kind of guy. So it surprised me that he would be the main villain.
Well, I almost get the sense from the titles and the sequel titles that it's more of, we're going to have, you know, bad guys, because you have to have bad guys, but for the most part, it's infighting. And that's what we're going to get.
Like, so the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Big villains, you just need, you need them there to sort of instigate the infighting. But I don't know for sure.
That makes sense. Well, hopefully that's the case. I'm just excited Baron Zemo might be in it, because I think he's a pretty cool character, that classic. It'll be interesting to see what take they do on that one. Other news is that the Russo brothers, who they directed Captain America Winter Soldier, are the ones who are possibly going to take over for Avengers, the Infinity Gauntlet. You know, four and what is it? Is that going to be three and four? Basically like parts one and two, so the third and fourth movies. So thought that was interesting. Didn't know what you thought about that, because you know more about that kind of stuff than I do.
I like the Russo brothers. I like what they've done. I'm not, like, there's been things that Joss Whedon has done that I'm not the biggest fan of. I liked what he's done with the Avengers, though, so it's hard for me to say, oh, bummer, you know, what's he doing? Well, I wish he was leaving, thank God. It kind of goes to my thought with J.J. Abrams and Star Wars and why he's only doing one. Now, we're stuck with this idea that everything has to be a trilogy. Trilogies are complete, trilogy does whatever we need it to do. Obviously, that doesn't matter. And I wonder if this was originally going to be, we're going to do the three films, but we have other plans now because we're going to have the Infinity Gauntlet series, and, you know, one and two going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure, but you know, I got no complaints over what they did. I thought the Winter Soldier was fantastic. It was really, and I believe that's what they explored it. I forgot the name of the year. What was it? Condor? Year of the Condor or something like that. I can't remember the name of the 70s flick that they were really trying to emulate with this movie. And I thought they pulled it off great.
Yeah, I think, is it Flight of the Conchord? No, that's Flight of the Condor. I know which movie you're talking about, because I've seen it. But basically that spy thriller kind of a feel, which you definitely got in Winter Soldier, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of what they did. I've got no problem. They pieced a good mystery together, put it together. I thought it was fantastic. I'm trying to look it up here real quick, see if I can find it.
Oh, the name of that 70s movie? Is it Night of the Condor? We're trying every kind of condor we can find.
Watch it not even be a condor.
Three days
of the condor.
3 days. It was a night, 3 days, a flight. Man. There's a flight in there somewhere, I'm sure.
2 nights, 3 days, all expenses paid trip of the condor.
That's right. That's right. And it has, who was the star of that? I can picture him he's in Winter Soldier.
He was in Captain America.
Yeah, Robert Redford, Sunday. Right?
There you go, yeah.
Nicely done. So good to hear. I agree. I liked Winter Soldier, so I don't have any problem with him taking over for the next Avengers movie. And then the last little bit of news was the Hollywood Movie Awards were the other night, which
pause real quick. Okay. Have you ever heard of these?
No, because they've never been aired before. It was just a bunch of stars getting together, getting wasted, and patting each other on the back and saying, aren't we awesome? Right? I mean, that's basically what they all are. But this one,
and I'm like, what is this? What is going on? I don't understand. Yeah. And then it was Robert Downey Jr. presenting an award to Robert Duvall, and I'm like, okay, you got me. I'm watching. And then I'm like, God, this is an award show to honor people that just want to honor themselves. I'm like, I was floored.
I didn't watch much of it, but the part I did watch was Michael Keaton got some sort of like career award, and I thought it was funny that in his speech he made a comment that people usually get this when they're dead. So he didn't know what quite to say, but it was funny. I want to see Birdman really badly, because as you know, we grew up with Michael Keaton as Batman, and there's going to be so many, you know, things that refer to, you know, what happened with him, although I'm sure not as drastic, but interesting. Anyway, at these Hollywood Movie Awards, on the red carpet, apparently one of the reporters tried to get Benedict Cumberbatch to confirm whether or not he was playing Doctor Strange. And if you get a chance, watch the video, because I think Benedict just gets annoyed with the reporter, the interviewer, whatever you want to call him, even before he asked him this, because he's obviously sort of irritated, and it amused me just to watch him be irritated at this guy who was obviously, you know, just a goof. And then when it gets to that part, he just completely shuts him down and doesn't really give him an answer one way or the other. The guy asks, like, are you going to be in a superhero movie or something to that effect? And he's like, oh, did you hear anything about that? I didn't know anything about that. Did you know something about that? And he's like, well, no, I just thought that you were going to be Dr. Strange. And he just, like, completely shuts him down. So, of course, some people are running with that saying, like, he's not doing it, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, dude, how long did we hear that What's-His-Face wasn't going to be Aquaman? Like, for what, a year? That he was like, I'm not going to be... I mean, he flat out said, nope, I'm more of a, you know, Lobo guy or whatever. I mean, he was even telling us other things. And then, lo and behold, the rumor is true, and there he is. So I'm hoping, because I'm a Cumberbatch fan, that he's, you know, just keeping it at bay, and he does end up doing Doctor Strange. But thought that was kind of funny. Last bit of little bit of news here was Stephen Amell, Green Arrow, came out and kind of harshed on DC for the announcing of their movies when they announced. I guess they announced who was going to be playing Flash in the movie, and I don't know if I missed that or I just haven't been paying attention or whatever. But basically, he took issue with it. Because they inherently, after the second episode of Flash, which had done really well, which in my mind I'm thinking, yeah, it's only doing really well, which I've seen the first episode and I liked it okay, but let's be honest, it's doing well because of the popularity of Arrow, and so people are jumping onto it, and then maybe it's good in and of itself, and like I said, I've only seen one episode of it. But it's been doing really well, and he said that he thought it was kind of a poor choice to announce that right after the second episode that was hugely popular, that somebody else is going to be playing Flash in the movies. Like, it was a personal diss. So didn't know what you thought about that. Is he making too much of this, or is he feeding into the fan frenzy? What do you think he's doing here?
I feel bad for him because that's a tough situation. I mean, DC has chosen to make two separate entities. We have movies and we have TV show. Mm-hmm. And no matter what you want to do, the TV show is going to be, second fiddle on this one. Always the movies are going to do better. And in this instance, I feel really bad for him because essentially Arrow is carrying the DC universe right now. Yeah. And that's weird to say, but you look at the Man of Steel, that was good. I enjoyed it. Not everybody enjoyed it. And it's been 2 years now?
Yeah.
So that's done. They're working on the next one, but that's not out. The Flash obviously is another example, but it's TV. Constantine's another example, and I can't remember the zombie one, but the I Heart Zombie or whatever. So that's pretty much all DC has actively going, with Arrow being the biggest one of those. So yeah, I can see him being like, hey, look, we're the hotshots on the block, if you just took away our thunder, not cool. In DC's defense, they rarely do anything right when it comes to marketing and press, so he should be used to it.
Well, I think some of it too was him sort of sticking up for his buddy that's the actor, yeah, you know, and kind of saying that you know, sticking up for him and wishing that he would get some more credit too, and it was the timing of it of, yeah, you know, right after that, like, let this guy have some props too here, DC.
It's so, not like the movie's coming out tomorrow.
No, it's not. It's not. In fact, I think that's been DC's biggest thing, is they haven't churned them out like Marvel has. You keep them hot and get them going. Speaking of, read an article that was sort of interesting, and it was more just a piece that somebody did, an opinion piece, where they were talking about, they were wondering about why, with the announcement of both Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel as being some of the first films in decades that feature a female character as the lead in a superhero movie, that Captain Marvel was getting all the love and all the noise and all the chatter on social media, and Wonder Woman was not really getting much of anything. So, didn't know what you... Do you think that's just part of the Marvel versus DC? Like, Marvel's the hot thing right now and people are just talking about it?
I think it's top of mind. We know Gal Gadot is Wonder Woman. We've been teased with her different outfits, and mm-hmm, we know she's going to be there, and she's been working out and all that stuff. There's only so much you can do that without actually showing footage. So right. I think DC, again, marketing train has beat a dead horse, and they got nothing else to say. So the new kid on the block, Captain Marvel, or the new kid on the block, so to speak. Obviously, she's not a new character. Just introduced. So cool. Let's talk about this now. That's all I think it is. I don't think it's Wonder Woman being shunned or blighted. I think it's more, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, and I just wondered if part of it was that Wonder Woman, in and of itself as a character, has become so sort of nondescript. I mean, we all know who Wonder Woman is. Like, she's widely recognizable. But is she much more than what you see on a t-shirt and a coffee mug to most people, And it's like, is she... I mean, you know me. I love Batman, and I've always thought Superman's kind of boring. I thought that he as a character is, like, too strong, too, perfect. And so it kind of makes him sort of bland. Wonder if that same thing can be applied to Wonder Woman, because, of course, who's talking about this on social media and Twitter are going to be largely female audiences. And so I was just sort of wondering what resonates to the female audience about Captain Marvel that maybe doesn't with Wonder Woman as much. And I don't mean to say that, women don't like Wonder Woman anymore, because that's certainly not true. There are certainly a lot of adamant fans for Wonder Woman that love her and think she's amazing and hold her up as the icon that she is. But I wonder if there's something about these two characters that makes Captain Marvel a little more, I hate to use the word trendy, but maybe a little bit more today. I don't know. Thoughts on that?
I don't know, because, it wasn't, 2 weeks ago that we were talking about so many people were upset with the retcon on Wonder Woman's origin, and that was going to be the movie version. So, we're still talking about Wonder Woman. Obviously, people got upset about that it hit the internet. So, I'm not sure. I mean, you bring up a good point, because Captain Marvel, her powers are, I don't want to say new, but maybe they're even cooler than Wonder Woman's, because Wonder Woman's aren't really defined, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. She's just an awesome warrior?
Well, I guess here's what I'm thinking. Is she just a female Superman? You know what I mean? Like, and is that, maybe she's got super strength, she's got flight, she has her lasso of truth, Captain Marvel, I think you've got a good point. I think some of it is just, hey, it's fresh ink. It's, this is the, the latest of what we've heard. But I wonder if it's just people are sort of like, oh yeah, Wonder Woman. We all know. Okay, yeah, that'll be cool, sure. But like, oh, Captain Marvel, who's that? I didn't know Captain Marvel was a girl. And that there's some of that curiosity, or people for some reason, and I think some of it's the writing, have really, attached themselves to this character. Here you have a character who has taken over the mantle from a male character. And she was Miss Marvel, but now she's Captain Marvel. And I think even that in and of itself is making a statement that I think that a lot of female readers identify with and think is pretty cool. And I think just her character is more interesting. And frankly, it's hard, I would imagine, to write Wonder Woman, because she can come off sometimes so frigid and uninteresting. And so some of the best stories write her as, humanizing her to an extent. And you don't have that problem with Captain Marvel. Like, she just is like, a normal person. She's not a goddess or Amazonian or anything like that, or even a princess. She's just an everyday person.
I agree. That being said, Brian Azzarello nailed it with the New 52 and Wonder Woman.
I liked his retelling of it. Yeah, that's true. And people before him have done it well, too. Gail Godot, that's...
She writes? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I doubt it. I should not harsh on her. That was rude and very stereotypical. Just because she's a model doesn't mean she can't write. But anyway, Gail Simone is who I meant to say, had a good run, and others have as well. So yeah, I just was wondering about that, wondering whether there was anything to go with there. But I think you're kind of right. I think it's just fresh ink, maybe. So let's move on from our news that's kind of come across the desk here and go to some of the things that we haven't really done in a while because we've been, you know, so caught up with what's been going on. And let's start with some of our recommendations. So you want to start or you want me to?
Sure, I'll go ahead and start. We'll do the family recommendation first. And as you know, huge movie guy, kind of always gauging when I can show the kids movies that we saw when we were growing up. I have become more sensitive for sure. Obviously, when I was a kid, it was like, oh, yeah, show me Freddy and Jason, you know, whatever, when I'm 9. Now that I have kids, it's like, oh, my God, should I let them watch Ghostbusters? We've had that discussion. But yeah. This weekend, Netflix, we were having movie night. And actually, no, I'm sorry, it was HBO Go. And Big was on. Let's give it a go. Let's watch Big. As usual, I am more familiar with the TV edited version of Big. So there are some serious swear words in there. But luckily our kids already have heard them. And no, don't say that and all that. But just be aware, if you're a parent, there are swear words in there. But they loved it. They loved the idea. And it was funny because James and Madison are going around just making wishes and hoping they would come true. And it was too cute. They really, really enjoyed the movie. So I would say Tom Hanks in Big, you really can't do much better than that. He just is phenomenal.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, that movie kind of, you know, put him more on the map, just a little bit, you know, because it made him, I think, more accessible to more viewers. It was one of the first ones that kind of crossed that. There'd be no Toy Story without Big, let's put it that way.
Exactly, and I didn't realize this. It was directed by Penny Marshall. And Penny Marshall was the one who directed him in A League of Their Own, where he got his first Academy Award.
Well, I did not know that.
He got his Best Supporting Academy Award for Jimmy Dugan.
Yeah, I like that movie, and he was hilarious in that.
It's a good one.
Definitely. Well, mine will be, and I'm going to do the whole 3D thing again here. Ooh, look at that. The power of video. I came across this, and my kids haven't watched it in a while, but this was really the first cartoon that I was able to show my son on DVD besides like the Super Friends and stuff. So and they loved it, and it's been a while, but I saw that it was out, so they must have watched it recently. But The Tick, you can get this on DVD. If you don't know what The Tick is because you didn't grow up in the 90s like Jimmy and I did, then for shame I have to say. But he's great. The battle cry of Spoon and all the ridiculous villains and his sidekick, Arthur. Just classic. Definitely not the hyper-violence that you get in some of the stuff that's now. And it was in that stage where I was being a lot more careful about that. Because Super Friends, like, no one punches anybody in Super Friends. You know, Spider-Man and his amazing friends, watch them. No one punches anyone in those. But then you watch, there were cartoons coming out, like the Avengers cartoons, where it was really, really violent. And so I was, and especially my wife, was concerned about how much violence do we show our son. And so then I came across The Tick. I'm like, well, here's something that's a little more modern, but still not that violent. So not a bad one for your younger
kids. Oh, and that was in a block on Fox Saturday mornings.
Ooh,
with
yeah.
Spider-Man, yep. X-Men, and The Tick. And there was a fourth one, but I don't remember what it was. I just remember those three, and it was like, yeah, Saturday morning!
Yes. Yeah, I can't remember what the fourth one was either. Must not have been as good as those three, because they pretty much ruled Saturday morning for sure.
They did. And I still have, I think you and I went to get these, I still have in my office the Burger King meal toys with those toys in it. I still have, like, six of them. I don't have Arthur, but I have I have The Tick. I have, I forgot their names now. Chairhead guy. Yeah, I've got a
Chairface Chippendale, baby.
Yeah, there you go. We sent it to you. I was like, I can't believe I found these. These are awesome.
That's hilarious. That is really hilarious. I will share one sort of toy collector story, that's what I'm trying to say, that is somewhat funny. I was at a toy store, and there was a Tick toy, and it was laying on the bottom, and it was the man-eating cow. which literally is just this cow that, at least in the cartoon, and I didn't read it in the comics, like, they just call it the man-eating cow. You never see it eat anyone or anything like that. It just, like, at one point it licks Arthur and he freaks out.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no evidence that it's really a man-eating cow. So it's just this toy of a cow, and I'm like, that's kind of funny. And I was like, yeah, but what am I going to do with it? It's a cow. Like, why would I want this? So I go home, and it was probably a week later, back when the toy guides came out. It was like Wizard. I don't remember what it was called, but they were putting out a guide for toys. And I just was flipping through, and I looked up, you know, the Tick toys, and I looked up the man-eating cow. $75 was how much that toy was selling for. I was like, no, why didn't I get that? I totally, and you know, in high school, in 1990, you know, whatever, $75 goes a long way, man. That buys you a lot of tacos from Taco Bell. So,
yeah.
Yeah, just one of those moments of a missed opportunity that I'm sure we can all relate to and have done at some other point. Not the same as having mom throw out your Star Wars toys, but hey.
Mom.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my recommendation. How about for the adults, for the Nerd Cave?
Well, the adults, like we, you and I both know, I'm slow to the punch. I will watch things that have been canceled and be like, man, that was really good. And obviously, I don't help the show along because I caught it too far behind. But this time, again on HBO, started watching The Newsroom. And basically, I started watching it because when the elections happened not too long ago, several people posted a segment from the pilot episode. Now this is Aaron Sorkin writing it, who I for some reason I keep saying I'm not a big fan of him, but it seems like I like all his movies and his TV shows, so I don't know why I say that. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip was a fascinating TV show that I think just got canceled too soon. If you've never seen it, go check it out. But my recommendation is The Newsroom. Jeff Daniels is phenomenal in this. I think the way he plays Will McAvoy, who's the anchorman or the lead news guy, is phenomenal, not to mention the fact that I just saw Dumb and Dumber 2 and was like, oh boy, this is crazy. But the speech specifically that he gave was just phenomenal, and it was obviously hard to hear, especially in a news setting where he was really put to the stake for saying it. But he basically said, you know, somebody asked in the crowd, in one sentence or less, and then she joked, because obviously you can't have less than one sentence.
Right.
Why describe what you think America's the greatest nation in the country, or in the world. And the two people on either side of him gave, you know, very generic answers, and it got to him, and he didn't answer. And he goes, it's not. And he gave a slew of reasons of why it wasn't. And you're like, oh, man, that's heartbreaking. And he's right, 100% right. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, but we were. We once were, and he lists all these great things that we've done as a country that we don't do anymore. And it's sad, because I really do agree with it that our country is divided amongst itself, and it's really ridiculous, because we can do a lot of great things working together, but people just stay on this side of the fence or this side of the fence and do this, and it separates us, and I think it's silly. So it was really cool to see that pilot episode. We're now up to season two. It's phenomenal, and one of the other episodes was from a new perspective when they announced they had killed Osama bin Laden. And you remember, yeah, I saw it on this side of the TV, but now you get a fictional, but a behind-the-scenes look at how they handled that and what they had to do, because they didn't know what the president was going to announce. So there were guesses, and it was very, very interesting to watch. So I highly recommend, if you get a chance, watch The Newsroom. It's very good. Love it. How about yourself, sir?
Well, if you have listened to our podcast before, you know this is not the first time. But here was my recommendation. I swear. Like, we cannot talk about this at a time, obviously, because that was exactly what I was going to recommend is The Newsroom. And it was funny because I must have seen the same clip that you did. And I thought, yeah, I have this, you know, season one on Blu-ray. I got it, I think, for Christmas or my Father's Day. I think it was Christmas, and I hadn't even opened it because I had just recently seen seasons one and two, so it wasn't like fresh on my brain. I had just seen them, but I wanted to rewatch it. And to add to what you said, because I agree with 100%, Jeff Daniels is a fantastic actor, by the way. I got to see him on Broadway, and he was amazing. Like, and if you don't believe me, watch The Newsroom and watch Dumb and Dumber. And just to see him play those two very different characters is pretty cool. But he is awesome. Love his character in here. Love when he, you know, and obviously, if you are a super conservative, you probably won't like The Newsroom. But that's no surprise. It's about the news, and you think that the media is this liberal, you know, craziness anyway. So, but I love when he goes after the Tea Party and just like is, but what he's bringing about, whether you like the Tea Party or don't, is the idea of how our government has become, like you were saying, divided, but polarized so much that you have like uber conservatives and uber liberals, and the rest of us just feel lost, you know, in between. And you also have, you know, corporations that own both. You know, it's something else that it sort of comments on and talks about that I think is really, but it brings up, you're right, really interesting issues, but it's also got these great characters that interact with each other. The dialogue's amazing. Their relationships are intriguing. You get invested into them. And for me, that's always huge. And finally, the other thing that I think is worth noting is that Olivia Munn is in this. And I know a lot of nerds out there have a huge crush on Olivia Munn, and she is really good. Really good in this show. Like, she, not just pretty to look at.
She floored me when she's doing a conference call to Japan, and she breaks into Japanese, and I'm like, okay, that doesn't sound like she heard it and is phonetically repeating it. It sounds like she's fluent in Japanese. So I looked her up, and I had no idea that she spent a lot of her childhood in Tokyo because of her stepfather was in the Air Force, and then she moved back to Oklahoma. But I was floored. I was like, oh, my God, that is so impressive. I just thought she was a good actress, funny, a beautiful nerd. Oh, my gosh, she is unbelievably smart and talented.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to belittle her, but I was like, wow.
No, and no doubt, because a lot of what we knew her for was Attack of the Show, where she's, you know, a host on there. And frankly, most hosts are put in front of the camera to look pretty. That's why Brandon was doing so well in his... when does he find out about that, by the way? If you don't know Brandon...
Let us know.
Yeah. So anyway, we got sort of sidetracked there, but Newsroom, that is hilarious that we both were going to basically recommend the same thing. Season 3, I believe, is supposed to be coming out. I know, right? Season 3, I think, is supposed to be coming out pretty soon. Yeah, so I'm excited.
First two episodes. I'm still playing catch up, but yeah, the first two episodes are out.
Yeah, you definitely got to catch up. Season 2 ends with, I remember when it ended, I was like, wait, this seems like it could be wrapped up and there's not going to be anything else, but it seems like there could be. And I was like really questioning which is it? Are they doing it? Are they going to continue, or is it? So I'm looking it up on the internet trying to find out, did they cancel it? Is it not coming back? And I think at the time it had been, you know, they weren't planning on a third season. And I think they started to listen to the fans and realized they needed to bring this thing back. I think it didn't hurt, also that Daniels won an Emmy for his performance as the news anchor, whose name's slipping my brain right now. But
Will McAvoy.
Yes, that's right, Will McAvoy. And well-deserved, because he really, really is good.
Phenomenal.
Too funny. So, there's another little segment that we haven't really done, but I kind of think it might be maybe not an ongoing thing, but an every now and then thing, and that is parenting advice. So I'm going to ask you, Jimmy, for your parenting advice on this particular instance, because it just came up. I have a son and a daughter. They're both in elementary school. My son is in the fifth grade, and they are very, as I'm sure your kids are too, very likable kids, very friendly. They make friends with everybody. They're not mean. They don't bully. They're open-hearted, compassionate kids. And the other day, there were some friends that had kind of come over. And I just sort of have a little, like, a little red flag kind of went up about it. And one of the friends had basically not really accused Cademan, my son, about, having a toy, like taking his toy, but was like, hey, where did you find that toy? Because I lost a toy just like that when I was playing at the playground. And my son was like, no, I got this for my birthday. And he's like, are you sure? Are you sure that's... And there was some other incident with my son's sonic screwdriver, because he's a big Doctor Who fan and whatever. Anyway, a couple red flags. Want to know, what do you think, how do you deal with, because I'm sure this isn't the first time, or isn't the last time, I should say, that I'll have to deal with this, with friends that you're just sort of, I just don't know about these guys. Because you don't want to say, like, well, you can't, you know, you shouldn't be friends with, or you don't want to tell them what you're thinking in your brain, like, this kid, like, you might want to make sure he doesn't, you know, walk out of the house with a bunch of your toys or something like that. Because you don't want to, you know, give them that perspective, because they're so open-minded about everything, as they should be. And maybe I'm just being a paranoid dad. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No, I totally understand what you're talking about. We have, we're new to this neighborhood, so we're just getting integrated into it. And we've had a couple instances where, now James is a little younger. He's in third grade.
Right.
Madison's in kindergarten, so that's not an issue yet. But issues where it's similar, and it's, I wouldn't say it's quite bullying, but it's almost like trying to convince somebody of something when clearly it's not true. And it's a situation where you just try and, after the fact, and you watch what is going on, and you kind of just say, you know, James, we raised you a certain way. We don't lie, we don't cheat, we don't steal in our family. We can't say that everybody follows those rules, because they don't. These are our rules. So when you are with this person, you just make sure that if something is going on that you don't like or that you don't feel comfortable with, it's not a problem just to say, excuse yourself and come home, or come find us, find an adult that you do feel comfortable with. We do enjoy having kids over to our house for that very reason, so we can sort of...
Right.
I hate to say referee, but, you know, just be there just in case. And I'm probably being too protective. I don't really care, because they're my kids, and I'm going to be protective. I don't want anything to happen to them. But, yeah, that's an awkward one. It's a tough one, because, again, you know, we were kids, and back then it was like, whatever, dude, it's mine. No, shut up, whatever. No, but now that you're a kid, it's like, wait, what? What did you just say about my child? No. Out of here, you know, it's what did you end up doing?
I haven't really had a conversation yet. I think I'm just gonna talk to Cade about him, and just sort of, you know, say, hey, you know, you might want to, you know, make sure that you know, don't get talked into anything, that and you know, be nice to the guy, but, you know, don't let him decide what you're going to do all the time, or you know, that kind of thing. But I don't want to, you know, like, shut it down, because I think that it's a good relationship. And I don't know about you, but I remember when I was a kid, I had several friends that I know for, you know, now looking back, I know for a fact that my parents were like, let him be friends with them, because it'll be good for the other kid. You know what I mean? Like, where, and it wasn't you, so don't worry.
Wait a minute.
Wait, what did I say? End transmission. No.
I'm going to call your mom and dad right now.
No, but seriously, where, like, I, looking back, and this is, of course, when I was a lot younger, looking back, I, you know, realize now that, you know, I was friends with them because, and my parents allowed that friendship to be and to continue, because they knew that I was a good influence on them. And that's how I kind of am hoping that this thing happens, is that I think you just have to maybe trust that your kids are going to be a good influence on someone else, and not be so much worried about them being a bad influence on yours. At some point, you have to figure that out. So, anyway, there's our Dr. Phil moment for the show. So, last, parenting wins and fail. We haven't done these in a while.
No.
A long while, which is good, because it means that, you know, we haven't been failing, hopefully, as parents. And even today's isn't like a huge fail, but something that is that I had a win, so I had to have a fail to go along with it. I felt, because we've been doing too many wins and we're starting to sound a little egotistical, maybe. So anyway, my parenting win was, we took the kids, and it's really, the credit should go to my wife, because she was the one who found this. At the Center for the Arts here in town, they had this group come in from China. They're called Shan Ren, and they were a folk fusion group. And what they did was they took a bunch of folk songs from China, and we're talking like northern China, like really obscure part. They all have their own languages. They still live in literally tribes, you know, up there in northern China. And so there are a bunch. Oops, I think I lost you. I see a symbol.
Sorry, dude, keep going.
Oh, you're there? Okay, cool. So I'm going with it. So Shan Ren is this folk fusion group where they mix those very cultural, traditional songs with Western instruments, and they use the traditional instruments as well, and they kind of mesh it, modernize it, because otherwise they feel like it's just going to die out, you know, with the way that technology and you know, culture just kind of keeps moving along, and it'll be forgotten. And so they've kind of recaptured that. Anyway, it was awesome. It was so cool. And I was first going, I was like, I don't know. You know, I'm kind of tired. I don't know if I feel like doing this. And I try to be artsy and the rest, but am I going to like this? Are the kids going to, I had no reason to think that it wasn't going to be awesome, because it was really, really, really cool. I might recommend, hey, anytime you get a chance to take your kids to see something that is a performance of some kind from another culture, do it, because it was so rewarding that my kids even wanted to get the CD. They can't understand singing about and what's going on, but they loved it. They loved it because they were great performers, and they were so intrigued by their culture and everything that it was really cool. So that was my parenting win. Felt really good. Felt like I had given them a unique experience. The fail comes from, yet again, a board game, Monopoly. So I had one a while ago over the summer that came with X-Men, which is a heated game in our house, I'll tell you what. You know, my kids have both learned how to be good winners and losers. And one time, Dad did not follow that rule about being a good loser, because I had lost so many games in a row. But this time it was with Monopoly, and it really was a combination of things. One, my son loves playing board games. He loves Monopoly. But as we all know, Monopoly takes a long time. It is a long game. And we even play the fast version, but it's not like a 20-minute game. Well, my wife and my mother-in-law are not board game people. And so every time we play Monopoly, they never finish. They always like sabotage themselves or give away their properties, and just sort of like, at one point my mother-in-law literally goes, yeah, I just died here, I'm willing all my money to you, you're taking this, you're taking that. And I was just like, ugh. And the fail was that I was getting kind of frustrated with the fact that they had both dropped out of the game. And so when it came to when my wife had dumped out, I just said, let's just throw all the money right into them, and then whoever lands on the parking lot, the free parking, gets the jackpot. And so they get all this money that she had, and we put the properties back up for sale and pretended like she had it. Well, guess who landed on the free parking? This guy did. Dad landed on the free parking. And that's when I realized, oh, this was a mistake. This was it, because no matter who landed on the free parking, it was going to be like an uproar. Like, it was going to be not fair and upset, and I had set my kids up basically to not be good losers about it, because there was this huge jackpot that was going to completely change the game all the way through. And so sure enough, I landed on it, and that's exactly what happened. But I have to admit, my kids ended up taking it pretty well, pretty well. And we had decided, you know, next time we won't do all of that money into the middle, because we know next time mommy's still going to drop out of the game in the middle of it, because she just can't make it through all of Monopoly. But we'll just take, like, 1,000 of it and put it in the free. Do you play by those house rules, by the way, with the where the free parking is, like, you get a jackpot in there?
I can't say we've ever done that. I mean, there are, I'm sure there's rules that don't exist in the rule.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't read it in, I don't know how long, so it's, you know, two families coming together, we've got rules upon rules, it just, I don't know. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, there's,
Do you play Monopoly much, or not one of your guys' games? Your kids are still kind of young.
There's a Goofy. Clue's the one that, I will say, Allison's parents played with us for the first time with the kids 2 weekends ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is that's so confusing about Clue, but watching something play for the first time is painful. Just painful. I wanted to use the candlestick on them. But they finally... But I will say, to start, wow, it's painful. But no, Clue is our game, and I guess there are some similar house rules that, you know, we put on that are probably not in the board or the game anywhere, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's what our Monopoly rules come from. By the way, we love Clue, too. And when my family plays Clue, they all have voices that they do. It's quite entertaining, actually. I'll have to post it online sometime when they're playing it. But, yeah, one of them, and I think it's a pretty normal sort of house rule, is that free parking. There's money in the middle, and if you land on free parking, you get the money in the middle. And usually the money in the middle is the stuff that, you know, you'll get the card that says you have to pay $50 to the, you know, whatever. Instead of putting that in the bank, you put that in the middle. If you land on the tax thing where you have to pay $75, you put that in the middle. And so then eventually someone lands on the free parking and they get all that money, and it changes the complexion of the game, and you might, you know, all of a sudden find yourself, you know, out of a hole that you were dug in. Another rule that we have is that once the first person goes bankrupt and they lose their cash, that's when the game's over. Because otherwise, if you're mortgaging a, you know, properties and all the rest of that, that's just, like, who? That's just forever long. No one has that much time in their lives to play that long a game of Monopoly.
Yeah.
So that was my fail. Not a huge one, but still not one of my brighter moments by far.
Bad luck one. That wasn't really a... You screwed up your kids for life.
No, thankfully not. Thankfully we haven't had many of those between the two of us, which is good.
Not yet.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, not yet. My wife turned to me the other day and said, "Does this mean after my daughter had done something, and it'll explain itself in a minute?" Because she turns to me and says, "Does this mean that when she turns 14, that we will be able to skip the whole sassy teenager phase, or what's going on?" Because there are so many times where, like, I'm like, "You are right now. You're acting like you're about 14 or 15 years old. Like, why are you talking like that?"
Yes.
Cracks me up. But hey, kids are kids.
5-year-old.
Shh, don't say that.
Yeah, I'm told they're all.
Yeah. Well, good episode. On our first video episode, hopefully turns out good. Hopefully people like it. Both our watchers, you know, are give us the thumbs up. And we can continue this. Mom, if you're watching, hit like, please. Yeah. It's down there.
You're actually watching live. That'd be cool.
Yeah, we'll have to try that sometime. Like, schedule it and then say, "Hey, we're doing this live," and see if people actually, you know, are watching while it's going on. So, yeah,
very cool.
Well, thank you very much.
Episode 18 is in the can. Thank you very much. As we all say, have a nerdy week.
Have a nerdy week.